Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ, and finally it's time for... This is volume 6, I believe, of No Shame. It's been a while since we did a No Shame episode, so it's going to be fun to do another one. And joining me for this episode from the Rock Strikes 10 podcast, it's Joey Haney. Hey, Joey.
Hello, BJ, and hello, everyone. Thanks for having me once again on the show. It is always an honor.
Thank you for coming on and exposing yourself the way in true No Shame form, hopefully. Like we always say, we're not embarrassed to, yes. I'm not embarrassed about liking any song because that doesn't really make logical sense to me, but it's just the concept of your average person, especially your average rock or hard rock person would be embarrassed in certain circles, especially to admit to liking certain songs, but yeah, that's the...
Yeah, it's like what Danko Jones says, there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure because if you'll admit it outright, then it's... You know, what is that? It's just something you like.
Yeah, like I always say, what's the source of the guilt? There's no positive answer. Why would you feel guilty about liking something unless you're just worrying about what other people think of you because you like a certain song, which is just, you know.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And I don't know what that says about me, but I've been like politicking to be on this particular episode. So I don't know what, like it's some sort of self-loathing thing or something. I don't know, but I've been dying to do this. No shame.
Well, you're obviously a huge music fan with a wide variety of tastes, so that's why this kind of thing is fun for you, because, yeah, I mean, you know, the way I always look at it is a good song is a good song. It doesn't matter who it's by. A lot of times it doesn't even matter how it's recorded, how it's produced, if it's got a good melody and, you know, it's not completely destroyed by the production, then I can enjoy it just because it's a good song. I just appreciate the craft of songwriting and even pop songwriting. I really appreciate, you know, what goes into writing a really good pop song with a catchy melody. So
yeah, exactly. And I'm like that with, if I'm going to intend a new metal band, not NU, but you know, something more modern, you got to give me a hook because I'm very pop oriented and that's how I grew up. So
yeah, that's why, I mean, I say I grew up as a metalhead, but it was always the poppiest for the most part, heavy metal.
Exactly. The kids ought to take notes, you know, like Maiden and Priest. They can be as heavy as they want, but they still have those hooks.
So. Yeah, and even like Metallica and Megadeth and all that stuff, there's a lot of hooks in that too. That's why there's a lot of thrash that's just boring because they don't have good melodies.
Exactly.
The thrash I, you know, gravitated towards was the stuff that had good hooks. It, you know, it could be in any type of music.
Yeah,
there could be a good hook. So
yeah, and Anthrax still writing great hooks.
Yeah,
they always have a good melody and a hook. So,
yeah, I mean, most of the people listening are probably familiar with the concept since this is episode number 6. Of course, that means this is the 6th time that I've had to come up with a list of 10. But it's fun, and I'm really gonna have to. I had like a working list on my computer, and it's pretty much used up now, so
wow.
Before I do another one of these, I'm gonna have to give it some thought to come up with some, I think. But
my initial list was over 120 songs, so I picked what I thought would be the 10 possibly potentially most embarrassing songs, but I'm ready to hit any of the reserves because I'm just gonna also play it by ear at the same time. But I do have some that made the really top echelon of the cuts, so.
Which one of us should start? You want to go first?
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna poker style. You go first.
All right. Let's see. The first one on my list here, this is an Australian pop singer, and this was her debut single in 1994. And I guess it was number one for 6 weeks in Australia. It was a top 5 hit in the U.S. The album was called The Garden. Her name's Meryl Bainbridge. The song's called Mouth. Do you know that song?
I don't know the song. I know that name. I never listened to her record, so.
Neither did I. Would I be so bad if I could turn you on? When I kiss your mouth, I wanna taste it. Turn you upside. Me out, and even though you know I love you, I'd be inclined to slap you in the mouth when I kiss you.
be? Would it be my fault if I could turn you on? Would I be so bad if I could turn you on? When I kiss your mouth, I wanna taste it. Turn you upside down, don't wanna waste.
I heard this song on the radio back then. At work, probably, and I used to listen. There used to be pop radio on sometimes, like Top 40 radio, and that was when, like, that song. I don't know, there were a lot of songs I liked back then that I've probably talked about on the show already, like Ace of Base and stuff like that. But,
sure,
you know, in the mid 90s, before auto tune and a lot of the hellish production techniques that they use in pop music now, there was still a lot of really good just pop singles coming out in the mid-90s, even in the middle of the whole alternative revolution and everything. And then some of them even had a little bit of like an alternative slant to them, maybe.
Yeah, like a clean slash distorted guitar sound, you know?
Yeah.
Like the Lilith stuff had a lot of that, you know? So.
There was that, what's her name, Donna Lewis, that... Oh, I Love You Always Forever, you know, all those kind of songs.
That plays at my job. I hear that every day still to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the one song I'm trying to think of?
The only reason that song.
You gotta be stronger. You know that one?
Yeah. Oh, what was that? Desiree?
Yeah, that's a good song too. Those were all like around the same time, and I kind of liked all of them. I mean, they were. Yeah. And there was that. I mean, that song gets really old, but that, what's her name? Dion Ferris. That. I know what you do.
Oh yeah.
All those songs. Yeah, they were all good songs. You know what? What's on Top 40 radio now is mostly so horrible to me.
It's like bad drug songs through auto tune. You know.
But anyways, yeah, Meryl Bainbridge, Mouth. It's just a '90s pop song. But I always liked it.
Don't wanna waste it.
All right, your turn.
Well, I was actually going to go with this first anyway. It's kind of a softball, but this is actually a pretty decent segue, I think. So when you talk about Australia and Australian pop, and then you get down to Australian soft pop, there's only one, isn't there? Air Supply.
Yeah.
I grew up in a country and Western household, and when I first heard Air Supply, that was rock and roll to me. Like, that was... what I consider it wasn't country. It definitely didn't have any kind of a country sound to it. So I guess in a way Air Supply was actually my first favorite band. So, you know, everybody knows Lost in Love and All Out of Love and anything else with love in the title. Making Love Out of Nothing at All.
That's the best one. Jim Steinman.
That's a good one. But to me, the best one, it's even more schmaltzy than any of those songs put together. It's a ballad even for them. Even the nights are better. So good.
Oh boy.
Even the nights are better. Now that we're here together. Even the nights are better. Since I found you. Oh, oh, oh. Even the days are brighter. When someone you love's beside you.
Yeah, I freaking love this song, man. Nothing I can really defend about it. It's super sappy. Even the video is super cheesy, because I guess all of them were at the time. But yeah, I love this song. No shame. I've even done this at karaoke. I mean, I'm outing myself quickly here. Yeah. So.
I don't mind a lot of Air Supply, but that song, there's that soft rock vibe thing that I really can't stand. That's in a lot of that kind of music. That I just, yeah. That one I can't. I am not into that song.
Oh, good. I was hoping to offend you at least a handful of times on this episode. So we're off to a great start.
Even the nights are better.
All right, well, my next song, I am not a big fan of the Eagles or Glenn Frey or most Don Henley. There are certain songs by the Eagles and Don Henley that I like a lot, but I'm not a fan for the most part.
Agreed.
And but there's this one song from the Miami Vice soundtrack. It was a number two hit in 1985 by Glenn Frey called You Belong to the City with the big
nice
sax part. Yeah. And,
like the Playboy Channel coming in, you know.
Yeah, this song I didn't like back then, but as I've heard it over the years, I've started to realize that it's actually a really good song, even though I really, you know, Glenn Frey leaves a bad taste for the most part. I mean, the same year as this song, he released Smuggler's Blues, which is pretty much as bad as a fucking song could get. That song is just a putrid piece of shit, you know, in my opinion. Ugh. Yeah. MTV used to play the shit out of those videos, too.
Yeah, yeah, and dying in the big gunfire blowout at the end. And, but yeah, I gotta tell you, like, I don't mean to plug my show so much, but when I do the Fallen episodes, whenever 10 people die, we do a show on them, because we
have
10 songs on the show. For Glenn Frey, we didn't do any Eagles. We did You Belong to the City.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that. Starting all over again. Your mood comes up and the music calls. You're getting tired of staring at the same four walls. You're out of your room and down on the street. Moving through the crowd in the midnight heat. The traffic roars, the sirens scream. Look at the faces, it's just like a dream. I don't know if there's another good Glenn Frey solo song. I was kind of thinking, I don't know if I've ever even heard any of his solo albums from the 80s. So I was kind of thinking maybe I should just give him a chance. But
yeah, me neither. And I work sort of around records still in my job. So I could tell you that I can't remember the name of the album, but the one that has the road sign on it with him, like he's on the cover and there's like a road sign next to him.
Yeah, I think that's his first solo album.
That must be his worst album by a landslide, because when he died, like, you know, all of his records disappear off the shelf. Still had multiple copies of that record. So that one's gotta be terrible. You know, his fans don't even like that album, apparently.
Yeah,
so.
I don't even know what they might sound like, what style of music they might be in. But
Yeah, give me the Miami Vice production every day.
But yeah, You Belong to the City is... I like it, even though it's very dated sounding, you know, to whatever dated means. But I mean, it's a good song. I have to admit it. So
I still remember them using an instrumental version of that song, like a cover instrumental version of that song on a Married with Children episode.
All right. What do you got next?
Oh, man. How can I segue out of that? I'm going to go with this. This one. I originally had the theme song to Happy Days on my list, but I think I came up with something even wider than that. This is probably the whitest song ever recorded, and even more so than anything that They Might Be Giants could do, and that's saying something. But when I was a kid, I looked forward to any music show on television. And I guess I still like this song because it takes me back to that time. So I'm kind of excusing it by saying, hey, it's my childhood. But when I hear the band Stand Buggy by Barry Manilow, I know that I'm going to be watching American Bandstand, and I love it every time. And that's probably the whitest song ever played on any show, including yours. So there's nothing I can defend about it. The lyrics are terrible. I'm not even a big band fan, and it's such a big band throwback, you know. I think people can defend a couple of Manilow songs in their canon, but I don't think there's a lot of defense for Bandstand Boogie. It's so freaking cheesy as hell.
Yeah, it's like a commercial jingle.
Ready to go, but a pro. Hey, I'm making my mark. See, this joint is jumping. They made such a fuss just to see us arrive. Hey, it's Mr. Dick Clark. What a place you got here. Swill spot. The music's hot here. Bethany East, give it at least a 75. Now for all you Joes, here goes my American handstand. Because I'm on the American bandstand.
He even name checks Dick Clark in this song. I mean, it's such an ass kiss, you know. And Dick Clark was a terrible person, by the way. No sympathy, but I loved watching it as a kid, and that's what it takes me to when I hear it. So it'll still surprise me if it pops up on the shuffle on the iPod, but it's there, so I have to put it on the list.
In front of all the TV, so if you're tuning, you'll see my baby and me on the bandstand.
So far, so good, right?
Yeah, that is an interesting pick. That's for sure. I mean, I thought about saying the Fraggle Rock theme, but...
oh, I love that, man.
Yeah, it's great. All right, well, my next song was written by Billy Preston. Apparently, it was co-written by an uncredited Dennis Wilson. It was on Billy Preston's 1974 album, The Kid and Me. And I guess Dennis Wilson used to sing the song a cappella as an encore at like every Beach Boys show from 75 until his death.
Is that fine? What a beautiful England. Thank you. You are so beautiful to me.
Yeah, well, the version I picked is Joe Cocker's version, which was rearranged by his producer, Jim Price. They slowed it down, and it was a top 10 hit in 75, and it's, yes. You know the song.
Oh, yeah, going back to the Dennis Wilson thing.
Yeah.
It was a solo with piano accompaniment.
Okay.
I'm a huge Beach Boys fan, so the song is You Are So Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also the Kenny Rogers version as well.
Oh, yeah.
But which is not terrible, but the Joe Cocker version is pretty great. But Yeah, very, very sappy ballad.
Yeah, but like that's the great thing about Cocker doing ballads. I mean, that's why. I mean, I'll piggyback on this. That's why "Up Where We Belong" is so great.
That's great, yeah.
Because of freaking Joe Cocker. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Can't you see?
So "You Are So Beautiful."
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good No Shame pick, do you think, or is it too?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a good one, yeah. Because it's just so sappy. I mean,
yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I've always liked it though.
Yeah, I was watching Carlito's Way with a friend of mine one time, and she told me that the inclusion of "You Are So Beautiful" ruined the entire movie. Basically, in that sense, I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah, it does probably seem like the kind of song that a lot of people would hate.
Yeah.
Like I picked "Lady in Red" on the last one. I think it's similar. It probably gets a similar reaction from a lot of people.
And that's a shameful pick because that's my mom's favorite song of all time. And she has the worst taste in music. Her favorite song besides that is "You Don't Bring Me Flowers."
Oh, I love that song too.
Wasn't that
actually
one
I think
episodes?
I picked that. Yeah, I think I picked that on an episode. Yeah.
You and my mom would get along very well.
Did I pick that on an earlier one? I might
have. I feel like you did now. Yeah. I feel like you did, yeah.
I should have if I didn't.
Really early, an early one, yeah. An early one.
Well, I remember when I did this with the Decibel Geek guys, I did pick a Neil Diamond song, and they acted like I was out of my fucking mind. Like,
yeah,
that was the
yeah.
most ridiculous pick on earth was Neil Diamond.
Which, yeah, no.
I love Neil Diamond. Correct. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. I like Heartlight. I'll admit that, yeah.
Oh, I think I picked Forever in Blue Jeans. So I probably never did say "You Don't Bring Me Flowers." That would have been a good one. Shit.
Yeah. All right, next episode.
Yeah. All right, your turn.
Oh, geez, where to go? Okay. This is completely something different now. I figure let's just segue into something just random. Would you sit down scratching and give me a beat? It's one of those songs, I can't explain it. I just think it's fun. It's from the 80s. I was young, but to this day, if I'm rolling, you know, scrolling down the Sirius on the phone and I see this song on here, I will kind of, and like hit it real quick so I can hear it. And it's someone who was a sibling, or I guess a daughter of a famous jazz musician, a guy named Don Cherry. So you probably know where I'm going with this now. Nana Cherry's one-hit wonder, "Buffalo Stance." It's just I don't know. Maybe it is the production. I think the production on it's great, and I just like all the sounds and the bibs and bobs on it. And you know, it's half rap and half pop. No Shame.
I don't think I like that, but I cannot remember how it goes.
Yeah, the bridge and the chorus is really good. I looked it up one time because I was so fascinated by the term. And apparently it's about a group of women at a club. And it also could be hookers. It goes both ways. But if you have a group of women and there's a guy trying to approach you, like the women kind of take a very like chest out stance, like they're ready to fight at any given time. And that's what a buffalo stance is. to ward off shitty guys. There you go. I bring the facts.
I will remember that song as soon as I hear it, but I cannot remember it right now,
yeah.
How it goes.
Yeah. Oh, you will instantaneously.
But I do not think I like it.
Okay.
But I don't remember how
it
goes.
Just to be safe. Just to be safe. Don't commit. Don't say you like it.
Well, I know I hated it back then, but there's a lot of stuff I didn't like back then that I, you know, came to like later.
Yeah.
You know, that one, yeah. I haven't thought about that in a long time, but that was one that was on MTV a lot.
Every 5 minutes, 88, 89, something like that.
Yeah. Looking good, hanging with a wild bunch. Looking good in the Buffalo stands. Looking good when it comes to deep punch. Looking good to stay alive. Well, my next song, I actually thought it was by Selena until I picked it for No Shame and researched it and realized it wasn't a Selena song. It's actually by Exposé. Which was a girl group put together by a production company in Miami in 84. And it says at Wikipedia, they became the first group to have 4 top 10 hits from their debut album.
Wow.
And then this song was a top 10 hit, but it was from their third album from 93. It's called I'll Never Get Over You Getting Over Me. And I guess I must have been confusing it with the Selena song Dreaming of You, but I thought it was a Selena song.
Gotcha.
Do you know that one?
I remember Exposé from when they were out, but I don't know if I know this song. I mean, it's one of those, once I hear it, I probably will know it, just like you said with the last song. So
yeah, you'll know it. Yeah.
All right.
I'm surprised it was from the 90s. I would have thought it was from the 80s, but it's from 93. So as long as the stars shine down from the heavens, long as the rivers run to the sea.
Tears just won't go away. Loneliness found me. Looks like it's here to stay. I know that I ought to find someone new, but all I find is myself.
It's very much like a grocery store or Walgreens song, you know?
Oh, man. It's a dentist office in hell.
Yeah.
Like, God, you know you're in a grocery store if you hear Tracy Chapman, Give Me One More Reason.
Oh, fucking hate that song. I hate that song. That song is so horrible.
It's the top 10 worst songs ever.
It really is. Ugh. I don't know what people like about that kind of just generic blues-based, you know, song with no melody. Yeah. I don't get it. Ugh, it's just so repetitive and just nothing.
That's why I always like to use the generic of Bonnie Raitt being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as to why the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame sucks.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's just because that's their taste. You know, Bonnie Raitt fits their taste. I mean, it's ridiculous. What the hell is she even doing in there? But especially before, like, Deep Purple and so many other bands, but...
It's all who you know, just like any aspect of show
business. It's just the taste, you know, the people... I mean, obviously now, because they got rid of a lot of people and they've got new people voting, and so, you know, now finally, it's not just people that only like Jackson Browne and Bonnie Raitt that are fucking voting, so.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so, yeah, it's your turn, right?
Yes. Well, I can segue into that from what you just said.
You got a Selena song?
No. You just mentioned Jackson Browne. an act that I'm not a fan of. I saw him open for Tom Petty during the last DJ tour, and he bored the shit out of me. And much like everybody else, they sat on their hands until he played Running on Empty at the end, and they all stood up. And
yeah, he has a couple all right songs, but yeah, he is not. He does not have a very exciting discography.
Yeah,
I don't know if I've ever told this story on the podcast before, but I was in a record store in Chicago one time, and there was a guy in there talking to the guy behind the counter. And he told him how he went to a Jackson Browne concert. The guy must have been playing Jackson Browne in the store. And he told the guy he went to a Jackson Browne concert with his girlfriend, and somebody came and invited his girlfriend backstage, and she went backstage and never came back, and he went home alone.
Wow. So, well, I hope he didn't hit her too hard.
Yeah.
But too soon? Okay.
Sorry, I ruined your segue.
No, that's good. I got to get my hitting joke in there. So. Wife abuse is not funny, but it's real. Going back to my youth, when this song was out, this was like a heavy rock song for me because I was not exposed to heavy rock until about 1983 or 1984. But just before that, there was a song off of an album of the same title called Lawyers in Love. And it's definitely a baby boomer Cold War anthem.
Calls of lawyers in love.
For some damn reason, I like nothing of Jackson Browne, but I do like this song for some reason. Once again, it's probably because it takes me back to my youth, but it's definitely different than anything else he's ever done, also, for sure. So maybe that's obviously another reason why I like it, or we'll still listen to it.
Yeah, and so much of his stuff just sounds the same, too.
Yeah.
So
it's all just so white. I keep going back to that, but it is.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, my next song, I got to read this stuff I found on the internet about this. So Dan Whitley, the man behind the Rebel Force band, tells the story of how Living in These Star Wars came to be. Whitley was running a recording studio in 1977 when he was approached by a dentist with a song idea about a newly released sci-fi picture. Whitley had never seen the movie but decided to check it out when the dentist offered to pay him $1,000 to produce the song. Sometime shortly thereafter, Whitley was talking to a friend, Michael Purdy, about the track. Purdy was looking to produce an album as a tax shelter and suggested they do an entire record of Star Wars themed songs.
You're playing Miko?
No. Whitley was running a booking service at the time and was auditioning young bands and musicians for gigs. He had come up with a list of potential song titles and threw them out to the young musicians. Some of those musicians came back with songs, and those songs ended up being the Living in These Star Wars album. A voiceover artist was hired to do the Chewbacca and Darth Vader sounds. When asked if any of it was cleared with Lucasfilm, Whitley's response was, "We didn't even think about it."
Well, George isn't very litigious, so good for them.
But the guy was like, "Hey, we should make a record as a tax shelter." That's what it says. But yeah, this song, I don't know if you've ever heard the song. It's called Chewie the Rookie Wookie.
Oh.
It's an awesome song. It was written by a guy who hadn't even seen the movie because some other guy would pay him $1,000. And then the other guy wanted it to release it as a tax shelter. So that's why it exists.
Wow.
But it's actually a really good song.
Wow. Not even in it for the music or anything. Just for money.
Yeah, and then he's just meeting musicians and saying, hey, write a song about Darth Vader. There's a song in the record called Respirator for Darth Vader because it rhymes. Yeah.
I don't know why I just got Godzilla, my BOC, in my head for Darth Vader's.
Don't Fall in Love with an Android is another song on the record. Of course, there's a song called May the Force Be With You, and there's one called The Ballad of Obi-Wan, and then in parentheses it says the letters OB and then the numeral 1. So Obi-Wan. Yeah. This record, I think, is really rare to get it on vinyl.
Yeah,
but so I don't have it. But Chewie the Rookie Wookie is it's a good song.
Can't wait.
What do you got next?
Man, let's go with this. I'm trying to segue once again. I have two different soundtrack cuts that I could include here. I'm going to go with this one. Also from the late 80s. And this kind of fits in with what we were talking about before we hit record about there's a whole list of songs that I could say of like liking a song past the prime of this artist putting out anything good or even remotely listenable. But I have the 45 of this, and it's even from one of the worst movies of all time. No, not Howard the Duck by Thomas Dolby, but I do like that song for some reason. But Mr. Soundtrack, Kenny Loggins, the theme from Caddyshack 2, the least funny movie of all time, or at least the worst sequel of all time, even worse than Weekend at Bernie's 2. But the song Nobody's Fool from Caddyshack 2 is the only decent thing that came out of that whole project.
I love that song. In fact, I played it on the Soft Rock episode.
Nice.
Because it's awesome. That's a yes. Great song. Yeah,
thank you. As I was talking that up, I was getting really nervous because I was like, oh, he's going to hate this.
Oh, that's an awesome song.
Oh, yeah. Great chorus.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's really just about the chorus because even the verses are terrible. I mean, he's doing a bunch of Caddyshack references.
Yeah, well, the production is, you know, a lot of people wouldn't like the production, that's for sure.
Yeah,
but
But yeah, I had a soft spot for Kenny back in the day. I didn't even like the Top Gun songs, to be honest with you. I don't like those songs.
No.
But I like Meet Me Halfway, and I like Nobody's Fool. And I
love I'm All Right. I'm All Right is great.
Yeah, I'm All Right's great. I like Box Humana even, but I do not like those Top Gun songs. I just don't.
No, I don't like the Top Gun songs either.
And even Kenny will tell you, like, someone said, oh, Giorgio Moroder wrote those songs. He goes, no, his engineer actually did, but Giorgio's name on it. Good. I'm glad you like Nobody's Fool. That makes me feel so much better.
Yeah, I think I even said on the soft rock, because the idea of the soft rock episode was to try to play the heaviest song by the soft rock people. And
that's got to be for Kenny, yeah.
Well, I think Danger Zone's probably his heaviest, but I wasn't going to play that.
yeah, screw that song.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a great, yeah, I mean, the chorus is fucking awesome on that song. So.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah, I have the 45 too. All right, my next song, this one might not work. I might be cheating a little bit, but Men Without Hats, of course, are a new wave band from Montreal, best known for the Safety Dance, but that's not the song I'm picking. I'm picking the title track from their third album, a song called Pop Goes the World.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Pop Goes the World by Men Without Hats.
I'm not sure how people feel about this song, if they even know it, but I think it's great. But it's very, you know, kind of ridiculously 80s, so.
No, I know this song. I still like it, too. And it's also proof positive people put Men Without Hats in the one-hit wonder category. It's bull, because they're a two-hit wonder, because this song is the proof.
Well, this song made it to number 20, yeah.
Yeah, that's enough for me. If you can get top 50, top 100, then you have two hits, you know. So if you do it twice, that's great. So yeah.
I was trying to put together an episode of One Hit Wonders where I play another song by a one hit wonder, but really so many of the bands or artists that people think of as one hit wonders, they did have more than one hit. So,
yeah. And I think there was a two hit wonder book at one time, and I've been trying to track it down forever and I can't seem to find it, but I'm fascinated by two hit wonders. Yeah, and especially ones that don't like the second one doesn't sound anything like the first one.
Yeah,
like the only two examples I can think of are Golden Earring and the Romantics. Like their two songs, they sound like two different bands.
Well, actually, we already mentioned Tracy Chapman. She kind of counts, you know. Fast Car, Give Me One Reason. Those are kind of her only two, you know, big hits, and they sound completely different.
Yeah, in a way, yeah, I guess you're right. It's just that she's so terrible.
Well, I don't mind Fast Car. I like that, yeah. But
yeah, it's all right.
I completely agree with you. Give Me One Reason. I hate that.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, so Pop Goes the World by Men Without Hats. Where the world went wrong, and a line on my face going,
I don't know if anybody's put this band on the No Shame. I've listened to all the No Shames, and I don't recall hearing them, so correct me if I'm wrong. But I also wanted to put this on to see if I could get either a rise or a pop out of you here. You know the Bloodhound Gang, right?
Yeah, I guess. There's that one song about the roof, right? The roof
yeah,
on fire.
Yeah. Yes, you know, which gave us the great line. And I'm not even... I do actually think that Jimmy Pop is a very witty guy, you know, because how can you... he wrote, "I'm not black like Barry White, no, I am white like Frank Black is." I mean, come on, that's a great lyric. It's super funny. It's comedy, you know, and it's nothing more than that. But I wanted to appeal to you, BJ, if I met some resistance with you on the Bloodhound Gang, then I would feed you this song. It's a song called Ralph Wiggum. And the entire song is all Ralph Wiggum quotes from The Simpsons.
And it's a Bloodhound Gang song?
It's a Bloodhound Gang song called Ralph Wiggum. It's basically a pop punk song set to those quotes. And I couldn't think of a better place to play this song than your show, BJ, because I know what a Simpsons fan you are. So you
the
must
name
know
of the this. Show came from The Simpsons.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So I think... if you're going to pick one Bloodhound Gang song, it's got to be Ralph Wiggum. So enjoy this. This is for you.
I'm pedaling backwards this. Snowflake tastes like fish sticks. We're a totem pole. Dying tickles. I heard a Frankenstein. Lizard, she's touching my special area. That's where I saw the leprechaun. Fun toys are fun. Chocolate microscopes. You're not it, that is so 1991. I bit my tongue.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the Bloodhound Gang except that that one, so that whatever. Well, they were on Howard Stern. There's some Howard Stern story with them, isn't there?
Well, yeah, Jimmy Pop used to be an intern on the Howard Stern show. Okay. And when he came on, he was like kind of a, it was weird. He was on as a mystery guest, but they didn't blindfold because basically Howard was in on it. He knew who he was. But he's like, "Robin, you know, this guy." Goes, "Oh, yeah, that's James. He used to work with us." It's like, "Yeah, but James has a hit on the radio now and they play Firewater Burn." It's like, "Wow, that's really you." He's like, "Yeah, yeah." And they go over this whole thing. But the thing that he admitted when he was on the show is that him and Fred just did not get along and he hated Fred. and then he left. He figured out a way, and this was like really early on in the computer days, but he figured out a way to leave message bombs on Fred's computer that he would receive years later. You know, like, so he letter bombed Fred Norris like way after he was gone, It's like, because he pissed him off so much, he had to express himself in that way. So there's the tie-in. And plus, they brought Mark the Bagger to the world, too. So.
Oh, that's how. Yeah, that's right. They're the guys that brought Mark the Bagger.
Yes.
All right. Well, my next song is very different from that.
Let's hope so. Right.
This is another Canadian group, just like Men Without Hats. This group was formed by Susan Pesklevitz and her future husband, Terry Jacks. Now, I'm sure you know the name Terry Jacks.
Of course. He's
famous
in the
for the ubiquitous earworm Seasons in the Sun. Now, do you know the B-side of the Seasons in the Sun single?
No clue.
It's a song with the very subtle title, Put the Bone In. That's the B-side of Seasons in the Sun. I think Soul Asylum covered it,
really?
Too. I think it's like a hidden track on the EP on Clam Dip or something. But
there you go. More innuendo.
Yeah. This group was called the Poppy Family. And they had a number one hit in Canada, and it was number two in the U.S. with their third single in 1969. It's called Which Way You Goin', Billy. You know that song?
No.
It's one of those... Even though it came out in 69, it sounds very 70s, like Carpenters kind of almost. But, you know, I tried to find a Carpenters song that wasn't horrendous for the soft rock episode, and I could not. There is no Carpenters song that's listenable. But anyways, Which Way You Going, Billy? So it's way better than the Carpenters, but it's in kind of a similar vein. So
okay. Yeah, like kind of granola rock, kind of pop folk.
Yeah, pop folk. But and it's got that, you know, classic 70s song title, Which Way You Going, Billy. I don't know if it's the same Billy who, would, you know, couldn't be a hero.
They couldn't be a hero. But,
you are my
I was not a fan of, I'm not much of a hippie fan, period, you know, musically or otherwise. And I guess this band kind of gets lumped in with that. It's the, you know, I referenced the Lilith Fair set earlier in the show. I guess these guys would be on the Horde side of things. Remember those Horde festivals with like the jam bands and stuff like that?
Uh-huh.
Or at least pseudo jam bands. Basically, bands that had some hits. They could manage to get on the radio while still maintaining their jam band integrity. And when Blues Traveler came out with that Four record, and of course that song Runaround, it's like, you know, it was just everywhere, and it's almost like if I never hear it again. But to me, it's all about the follow-up single on that. That song Hook, you know, I think it's called that because it's the chorus is a massive hook, and I really just like that song. When I hear that song, I still like it. And, you know, not even a big fan of the band. Otherwise, of course, they're very talented. Popper's an amazing harmonica player. We all know that. But this song, man, it's just sweet pop greatness, I think. So,
which song is that?
Hook, the second.
Is that like the Love Will Bring You Back one?
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. The Heart Will Bring You Back. Yeah, yeah. That ballad. Yeah. Yeah. Love this song. What do you think of it, BJ?
I would never want to listen to it. I could see how it's a. I could see how you would appreciate it, though. It's probably a well-written song. I don't think I like his voice. And the thing about the harmonica playing, though, like, exactly what people hate about, like, what Vinnie Vincent did on Vinnie Vincent Invasion or, like, Yngwie or whatever. Yeah. Isn't that the same thing John Popper does with that fucking harmonica? It's like, what the fuck?
Totally,
yeah, you can play it
thing.
Fast, but who cares? It sounds stupid. So I never liked his harmonica stuff. But
yes, for the record, I'd rather hear Paul Butterfield or Michael Monroe play the harmonica, you know. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. But he's a harp wanker.
Yeah.
But catchy song, good ballad. It's not too long.
Familiar heroes from long ago. No matter how much Peter loved her, what made the pen refuse to grow was that the heart brings you back. I ain't telling you no lie. The heart brings you back. All that you can rely.
My next pick, it comes from Mariah Carey's fifth album, Daydream, from 1995, and there's really not much from the Mariah Carey catalog I could stand, but as my sister will still tell anyone at any time, I liked this song when it came out. It's called Always Be My Baby.
Huh.
And it was her 11th number one single.
Jeez,
at the time.
Man. I was going to guess that you were going to play maybe her version of Bringing On the Heartbreak, because I know you probably love that.
I've never heard that.
Oh, you've never heard that?
No.
Oh, it's so bad. Oh,
I didn't even know she did that.
Oh, she's covered some amazing songs. She's done Prince's Beautiful Ones. She's, of course, done Harry Nilsson's Without You. She can ruin a really good song.
Oh, and it's funny what we were saying, you know, what John Popper does in the harmonica and Yngwie does in the guitar. That's what Mariah Carey does with her voice, right?
Her voice, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, Mariah Carey, Always Be My Baby. It's just a...
BJ, I think I can try to get some of the hate off of you after Mariah Carey with this one, hopefully. That's my goal here on this show. Man, this is one of those just band names, when you say this band, you usually get a groan out of it. But I think they've actually written some cool pop songs, even though this is, you know, one of those bands that would get in the metal magazines, but they have like nothing to do with metal, you know. And I'm not going to play anything by Nelson or anything like that, but it's close probably in some people's eyes. But Trickster.
Yeah. Which song?
Actually, not the initial hit. I'm going with the second hit because...
The second hit was...
It's on the self-titled album still.
Is it the Love's More Than a Four-Letter Word one?
No.
What was the second hit? Give It to Me Good was the first hit, and that is not such a good song.
Yeah, but when this one comes on Hair Nation, I still...
Was it a ballad?
No, it's... I mean, it has a ballad feel to it, but it's definitely a rock song, at least for them it is. But this song is called One in a Million. So, and I love this song. It's got an amazing bridge and a great chorus. I mean, everything about this song is just pop greatness. Light, hard pop, I guess. I don't know what you call it, but I like the song. There's no denying that. They got great taste in music, and plus that guitar player is, he's kind of in the Def Leppard fold, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's because whenever, unfortunately, when Viz got sick over the last few years, he stepped in and done the shows. But yeah, I don't know. There's just something about this song, especially. So I kind of give him a shot. Even that last album they put out was actually kind of fun to listen to. But yeah, they're a one hit wonder, I guess, in America. I don't even know if One in a Million charted, but it should have been bigger than Give It to Me Good. That's what I think.
Yeah, Give It to Me Good didn't sound like anything else in the album. Yeah, I like that song. I had Trickster back when it first came out, but I don't think it holds up. It's one of them that doesn't hold up very well compared to a lot of the other stuff. They're definitely not one of my favorites from that group of bands, you know. But yeah, they're not bad. I like that kind of music. So
yeah,
I saw Trickster live like 3 or 4 times just because they opened for everybody.
Yeah, then did you ever see him open for Kiss? Because if you did, that would have been revenge, right?
No, I didn't see him open for Kiss. I saw him open for Scorpions and Lynch Mob, and I saw him with Warrant and Firehouse, and I saw him at Summerfest. I saw them 4 or 5 times.
That's what I was like with Collective Soul. I saw them a whole lot because they opened up for every band I was going to see at the time.
Yeah.
They were nominated, but they didn't make this list.
And I always remember... remember the show Remote Control?
Oh yeah, love that show.
I was so into pop metal and everything back then. Then there was a guy who was a contestant on Remote Control, and he had a Trickster shirt on. This was before their album came out, and he said he was in the band.
Really?
And then, so when I saw that, I was like, "Ooh, I want to hear that band," because that's how I was about everything. And then,
sure.
So when they came out, I looked at the pictures, and the guy who was on Remote Control wasn't in the band. It turns out he was just their friend. But he was going to be on MTV, so he wanted to promote the band.
Wow, that's
so
that's
he
awesome.
He said, I know he said he was in the band, but he wasn't.
Right.
But he was just their friend. But yeah, so even before their record came out, I knew who Trickster were. And of course, there was a band in the 70s called Trickster, but they didn't spell it the same. They didn't spell it with an X, you know. But
so they spell it the right way, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The 90s.
And those guys, the guys from Shabby Road are friends with Pete Loren. They had him on their show. That was pretty good listen.
Nice.
He was on there.
Yeah, I'm not alone in Trickster.
I think I can name every guy. Steve Brown, PJ Farley. What's the drummer's name? Mark something? Mark. You never saw them? When they played live, their encore, they would do You Gotta Fight for the Right to Party.
Nice. But yeah, the Undercover record. I have that record.
And I think one of the other guys would play drums.
Yeah.
So the drummer would come out and rap. And every time he would just do this screaming rant at the audience, like, "Come on, motherfucker, I want to hear you." And, you know, seeing him like 5 times and seeing him do the same like insane rant. Me and my friend, I think my friend Dan saw them with me every time we saw them. And we, by the 4th or 5th time, we were just cracking up at this idiot just like, you know, because we saw him do it so many times. It was the same shtick every time. Like he was acting like he was so fucking hyper and had to get the crowd going. And
that's what Anthrax did for I'm the Man. They just ripped it off, but you know, did Beastie Boys instead.
Yeah,
because like Joey would play the drums and then Charlie would do the rap, and you know, yeah.
Well, and then also one of the times I saw them, the guitar player said, this is a song for all those countries in the Middle East that want to fuck with the USA or something to that effect. And then they played Revolution by the Beatles. So that kind of missed the point on that one, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have the Undercover EP where they do all those songs?
Oh, God, they do the Nine Inch Nails song on there, right?
Yeah, they do Terrible Lie. They do 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. God, some other stuff. I do remember they said, I don't know why I remember this crap, but the credit on Fight for Your Right to Party was that it was a quote-unquote live version, and it was it was recorded at the Enormo Dome.
Yeah, that was always their encore.
Yeah.
Well, I most of the time I saw them was up for their first album. I think when they did Revolution, it was when the second album was out, though.
Make
All right, my next pick is, it's kind of obvious, and I think it's even been mentioned on a No Shame episode before, but I kind of have to pick it because my friend Dan, who I just mentioned, we saw Trickster 5 times together, he used to really make fun of me because I liked this song when it came out, and we were just heavy metal guys, and we weren't supposed to like this kind of thing. You know, that's kind of the whole No Shame concept. I wasn't supposed to like this, but I did like it. And I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's Falco. Australian singer-songwriter. And according to Wikipedia, he was a rapper, which I think is stretching the, stretching the definition of
Austrian,
that term.
Austrian, by the way.
Oh, did I say Australian?
Yeah, you did. But my
paper says Austrian, but I read it as Australian. Yeah, obviously he's not Australian. Yeah, so this was a number one hit, obviously. I mean, this song. What's funny is, well, like I said, I remember my friend Dan making fun of me mercilessly when I somehow, for some reason, revealed I liked this, which I don't know why I even revealed it at the time. I was 12 when this came out, so. But, you know, I'm just a sucker for a big hooky chorus. But what's weird is I always thought that this song was associated with the Oscar-winning movie Amadeus.
Right, yeah. It's,
but it's
a
not.
Piggyback. Yeah,
it wasn't like I thought it was on the soundtrack or something for that movie.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Came out the next year after the movie, I think.
Yeah, it was a piggyback because it was such a big. It was like the best picture of the year.
Yeah, it was best picture. It won a bunch of Oscars, and then this came out the next year, but they weren't connected. So
you are playing Rock Me Amadeus, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Bekannt, er war ein Mann der Frauen liebten seinen Punk. Er war ein Superstar, er war so populär, er war zu exaltiert, genau das war sein Flair. Er war ein Virtuose, war ein Rock-Idol und alle suchten noch heute Captain Rock Me Amadeus.
I've got the 45 of this, on the MP3 also, and the B side is incredible on this because it's called the Canadian version. Have you heard this?
Ooh, Rock Me Amadeus, eh?
Yes, Salieri was a hoser.
What the hell does the Canadian version mean?
I don't know, but it's a different edit completely. It, like all the pop is like kind of stripped out of it.
Huh.
And it does this voiceover timeline for the life of Mozart, with all the riffs like in between the timeline pieces. It's weird. I'll send it to you if you.
I think I have the 45 of this, but I never flipped it over.
Yeah.
If that's
what's
on the B side of mine.
Then. Yeah. Yeah. I'll send you it and tell me what you think of that. But I like Jenny. I like Deanna Calling. I like his. I love his version of De Commissar. I mean, he's the original guy that did it.
Well, you know, course, I mean, Rock Me Amadeus is a ridiculous song.
Oh, completely.
But the chorus is awesome. That's what I like about it is the chorus.
I talked about how I was raised in a country western household. So if I had to be completely honest, like my first favorite bands were like Statler Brothers, Alabama, and the Oak Ridge Boys. And of course, Oak Ridge Boys had a big hit with Elvira. Everybody knows that song, but that's not my pick because I am no shame. People can be like, oh, I like Elvira. It's fun, you know, and almost people can get behind that. But the follow-up that they did was it's all the shame in this one because it's a complete sequel to Elvira, it's such a lazy song because of the fact it's also a girl's name. And if when you hear the song, you may have never heard this song before,
probably not,
but not only is it they use a girl's name in the song and the song title, but the alliteration of the lyrics, the way they sing it, And even the solo section, which is a saxophone solo, by the way, which of course adds to the cheese. The saxophone solo is a note-for-note rip of Yakety Yak by the Coasters. So the song is a complete rip-off of Yakety Yak in both ways, the way they sing it and even the solo. And the song is called Bobby Sue, and it's just that sweet, sugary vocal group thing that it's what I love about those bands, and I can't shake it. I mean, of course, their earlier stuff is a lot more less embarrassing, but there's probably no more
the early Oak Ridge voice.
Yeah, well,
heavier Oak Ridge boys.
Actually, I don't go too early on them because if you go too early, you get religious music.
Uh-huh.
But stuff like Y'all Come Back Saloon and Leaving Louisiana in the Broad Daylight, like you can defend those as like, oh, it's like pop country, like cocaine country, as Randy Brown says. But Bobby Sue is just so damn embarrassing, but I got to be completely honest. I liked it more so when I was a kid. When I listen to it now, I do cringe, but for some reason, I don't seem to still turn it off, and I don't know why.
When I was a kid, my friend Paul, his mom used to, she would be in the bathroom for a long time, and we would know she was doing her hair, and then she would come out with it hairsprayed in like a big pile on top of her head. So we'd take his guitar and we'd stand outside the bathroom door, and when she came out, we would start singing Elvira. I don't know why. We thought it was hilarious for some reason.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, Oak Ridge Boys, wow. It's the only time they're ever going to get played on Rock and Roll, I can tell you that.
Yeah, nice.
My last pick is a weird one. The song was a hit in the UK, I guess, in 78 by Scott Fitzgerald, who's not related to F. Scott Fitzgerald.
I was gonna say.
A duet with Yvonne Keeley. It reached number 3 in the UK in 78. But the version I'm talking about is a sped-up version, I guess, of the same song. It's performed by Mice. in the 1995 film Babe. It's called If I Had Words. Do you know this song?
No. It's and, you know, really I've never even seen Babe, actually, believe it or not.
It's sung by mice. So It's kind of like chipmunks style, you know, the chipmunk style.
Yeah.
And but it's a really good song.
All right.
So If I Had Words, the version from Babe, it's pretty ridiculous, but all I right. like it. So
take it away, mice.
Hey.
What?
You look like an intelligent, sophisticated, discerning young fella.
Who, me?
Yeah, follow me. Oh, boy, are you in for some fun.
What are we doing? Where are we going?
And a one, and a two, and a three. Hit it! So we're down to your very last pick. Did you save something good for the
end? I think I saved a pretty decent closer, and this ties into a song from a movie, just like you had just now. I guess this is from a movie from the mid-80s that I still actually watch and enjoy, and this ties into No Shame, because I don't know why, but I still love it. It's a youth thing, and when it came time to do the music for this movie, the people were like, well, we can't afford anything that people will know, because all that's too expensive, or we just have no budget. Because they literally licensed one song that people would know for this movie.
They could have just done a Tax Shelter.
Yeah, this could be a Tax Shelter soundtrack, actually, because it's a lot of sound-alikes. And if you hear any of the songs, even just listening to the movie, you could be like, oh, that sounds like this band, or that sounds like this band. I'm not quite sure what this song sounds like, but it's a great closer for a last act, and it's montage central. But every time this song comes on in this movie, I get invested massively, even though I know what's going to happen. But every time I fall for it. And that's one of those cases where music definitely plays a part in your movie, for better or worse. But this song from the movie Teen Wolf, Mark Safon is the guy's name. I don't know anything about this guy. But there's this song they play at the end of Teen Wolf during the finals of the basketball game. And it's a song called When in the End. And this is like perfect for like an AOR episode of yours. But yeah, if you're not familiar with this song, I think you're going to like it, BJ. So, but that's also me just admitting no shame that it gives me a good feeling when I hear this song every time when I watch Teen Wolf. When in the End by Mark Safan, or Safan, S-A-F-A-N.
Yeah.
All right, so is that like the win in the end? Is that like the climactic song for the
yes.
movie? Yeah, so it's
yes.
good. Yeah, good climactic song for
exactly.
the episode. Yeah,
yeah, that's why I wanted to wait on that one. So
yeah,
it's all everything is intended. It's all executed, and I had notes, and I took this very seriously because I love your show, especially No Shame.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Joey, for bearing your soul. And admitting to liking the Oak Ridge Boys.
was that my big scandal for the show?
Yeah, that is pretty bad.
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'll be back.